Today's daf in Mesechet Shkalim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Ches, and we are holding right at the very top of the daf. Except that the problem is that the words at the top of the daf don't belong there, and basically are not meant to be part of the girsa. So please just skip the weird words about menorah, betzofa, and vahai. Okay, forget about that. And start with the word Tani. Okay. So Tani, we have a Braisa, and the Braisa discusses the placement of the Shulchan and the Menorah. And remember that this was important in our whole discussion yesterday when we were talking about the various Shulchanai, Shas, or Shloimai, in the context of the discussion in the Mishnah about how many Shulchanot there were, which obviously was talking about the second Beis HaMikdash, where we didn't have any of those Shulchanot, Shas, or Shlomo. But meanwhile, we want to just clarify the problem of having the menorahs that Shlomo made and the shulchanos that Shlomo made on the supposedly on the right and the left, which didn't make any sense because that would put them, if it meant to the right and the left of the entryway to the Heichal, it would mean that we were putting shulchanot and menorot both on the north side and the south side. And that is a big no-no because the Torah defines the placement of the menorah to be on the tzela, on the davka, to the dorom, as we'll see, and when it comes to the shulchan, it had to be on tzela, tzafon. So let's just take a look at the braisa that points out where the original in the Mishkan, where exactly everything was. So hashulchan haya natun michatzi habayit vilifnim, moshuch min hakotel shtei amot umechtza klapei hatzafon. So this means, when it says Michatzi Habayit Vilifnim, it does not mean literally Michatzi Habayit. It means Michatzi HaHeichal, meaning the Kodesh, not including the Kodesh HaKadosh. Remember that the entire measurement would have given us in the Beis HaMikdash Shishim Amos. So on over here, so what we're talking about is take off the Kodesh HaKadoshim, again, in terms of Beis HaMikdash, which would be 20, leaving 40, and this would be in the inside 20. In the Beis HaMikdash. So, that would be 2.5 amos away from the northern wall, Klapei HaTzafon. The 2.5 amos, according to Rashi, are to allow the Kohanim to fit in. You have to have two Kohanim that are coming in, carrying the Lechem HaPanim, and they both remember that they act simultaneously. So you needed 2.5 amos to be pulled away from the wall, simply to provide space for the Kohanim to be able to insert the Lechem HaPanim. And then on the other side, you had facing, because it says nochach, so you had facing the shulchan, you had the menorah, and therefore was directly opposite to the daron, and that was on the northern side. You couldn't, because it says v'samta menorah nochach ha-shulchan, and therefore it would also be moshuch kima from the wall, from the southern wall, because it needed to look the same. And then the mizbeach ha-zahav was in the middle, right in the middle of the bayit, and it would be precisely at the division point. In other words, it would split the Heichal into two. So it was right at the point, Mechetzio Vilifnim, and it was Mashuch Kim'ah Klapei Chutz. Now, this does not mean that it was facing beyond the halfway mark. It means it was Mashuch Klapei Chutz from in between the Shulchan and the Menorah, because the Shulchan and the Menorah could not be interfered with the by the Orin, by the Mizbeach HaZahav. Because since the Torah says Nechach, it means that they had to be, as the Gemara puts in the Bavli, Roim Zezah, they had to be seeing each other. And therefore, the Mizbeach was more towards the outside, but everything was from the midpoint of the Heichal inwards. So that would be Kulam Hayu Netunim Mishlish HaBayit VeLifnim. If you're looking at the entire Heichal, including the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so then that would be 60 Amos, and they would be within one-third of the Bayis Bifnim, which would mean after the first 20 Amos. Okay, so this concluded our discussion about the Shulchanos. Now, Shlomo HaMelech also made Menorot, and we have exactly the same discussion we had yesterday about the Shulchanos we have today about the Menorahs. Eser Menorot, Asar Shlomo, Shenemar v'yas et menorot ha-zahav eser kemishpatam. He made them all the way that Moshe Rabbeinu was mitzvah to make the menorah in the Mishkan. V'yitein b'hechal chamesh miyamin v'chamesh mismol. And it uses the same lashon that we had yesterday about the Shulchanos, five to the right and five to the left. And again, the Gemara asks the same question. What could that mean? In Temar, Chamesh b'tzafon v'chamesh b'darom, if you're going to say that that means that when you walk into the Heichal, so they were to your right and your left, which would mean that some of these menorahs were on the southern side and some of them were on the northern side. That doesn't make any sense. V'halo eina menorah k'shera ela b'darom, that wouldn't be a kosher menorah, because it says b'feresh, v'et ha-menorah nochach ha-shulchan al tzela ha-mishkan teimona. So it had to be towards the south. So what could it possibly mean? Must mean matam lomar chamesh miyamin v'chamesh mismo, exactly the way we understood it yesterday with the shulchan. It means chamesh miyamin menorah tosha Moshe v'chamesh mismo lo. So what this means, therefore, is, again, the Yerushalmi is not going to go into the detail that they couldn't fit and so on, which I already explained yesterday. The Yerushalmi is not interested in going into detail. It's simply putting into place what it turns out in the Bavli means that Moshe Rabbeinu's menorah was up front and all the others were to the right and to the left, facing, like as if the way the Gemara puts it, as if they were Talmidim that were sitting in front of the Rebbe. And Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting at the desk, so to speak, in the menorah, the front menorah. Same thing that we had yesterday, legavei the shulchan. And afal pikein, again, just like we had about the shulchan yesterday, that afal pikein lo haya misader el al shel Moshe bavad. Over here also, afal pikein lo haya mavir el al shel Moshe bavad. The only menorah that was lit was the menorah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenemro menorah tazahav v'neroteha l'va'er berav. Perhaps uses the singular menorah tazahav, the menorah tazahav, and her neirot. Mashma that there was only one. And again, just like we saw yesterday, we have also a pasuk that is mashma otherwise. Reb Yosef, Reb Yudah Emer, al kulan hayam avir, shenemar ve'et ha-menorot v'neirotehem. So here it uses a lashon of rabin, and it says leva'aram, to light all of them, kamishpat lifnei advir, Zahav Sagur. So they were all made out of the finest quality gold. The Gemara says in the Bavli, Zahav Sagur means that when anybody would open up selling this kind of Zahav, all the other stores closed. So it's a cute legend of Zahav Sagur. It was the absolute purest of gold. Anyway, so again, the contradiction, there is a brisa that actually solves the contradiction. The brisa says, Lo hayum madlikin ela, sorry, lo hayum madlikin techila ela ben menorah shel Moshe. So in other words, the kvias of the initial hadlok is Moshe, and then they would light maybe every night, maybe sometimes alternating nights. That was a machlokas in the Bavli, but there's no contradiction between the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim and the pasuk in Malachim. It could be that there's different meanings to the Lashon Yachid and to the Lashon Rabbi. Anyway, it's interesting that the next pasuk says, Vaperach, Vahanerot, Vamilka Chaim, Zahavu, Michlot Zahav. It's not clear what that means. So that means that the flowers on the menorahs and the neiros was on the menorahs, which were the actual lamps that were lit, and even the tongs that they used to clean out the inside after they had to fix the wicks, all were Zahav, and then it adds the word Michlot Zahav. What exactly does Michlot Zahav mean? So Michlot, says the Gemara, it means to complete, to finish off. Hein kilu Zahavo shel Shlomo, that the investment into making these menorahs was so massive that it basically bankrupted Shlomo's gold. And he utilized all his gold to make these menorahs. This study revealed a b'shem Hasi. Hayash Shlomo notel elef kikrei zahav. He would take 1,000 kikros of what people thought was gold, and he would put them in a refining crucible 1,000 times. Achu ma'midam alachad, until he reduced 1,000 kikrot of zahav into one kikar. L'kayim ha'shenemar, Kikar Zahav Tahor Asahota. It was made out of complete and total Tahor. So Shlomo HaMelech felt the only way to be certain that he had gotten rid of every single possible dross molecule was to basically redo the refining process again and again until there was only a single kikar left. Tanya Amar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, once happened that they made a menorah for the Beis HaMikdash, and they ended up weighing it, and it weighed too much. It was one dinar zahav more than the correct weight of the menorah in the Midbar. So what they wanted to do was to reduce it so it was the correct value, so that it should be like the tzura of the menorah that was shown to Moshe Rabbeinu. So they figured they would put it through more refining. Yichnisu l'kur, they put it through 80 times, and it did not change a bit. Lo chasra klum. Now, this is not consistent with what we just said about Shlomo HaMelech. Says Gemara, why not? It's perfectly consistent. The Ya'ut, why? Nothing wrong with that. Because, look, adelo yokum al-barare avichaser sagin. Obviously, if you're starting off with very impure gold, so then there's going to be massive changes in the beginning of a refining process. And as you get closer and closer to the birur of the pure gold, there's going to be less and less evaporation of other metals and melting of the gold. So in the end, it's not going to be chaser anything. So it's very possible that what we're talking about over here, the menorah that they made in later years, maybe that was already made out of very highly refined gold. And what we're talking about by Shlomo HaMelech was gold that was not highly refined until he went through it. Nothing wrong with that. And now we're up to Halacha Arba, which brings us...
The way Rebbe just explained that, Rebbe explained away the words and... It sounds like Rebbe was explaining what the year says Menorah HaMikdash as opposed to the Menorah of Moshe, right? Rebbe said they were making a new one. This is not what happened to the Menorah of Moshe.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Which requires the presence of our very Catholic captain here. Oh, he likes to be called an Amar Kol. Just remember, the Katoliki is in the head of the Amar Kol any day. You don't like the Catholic implications. Even though you do have very Catholic reading tastes and so on. Okay. So now we're moving on to the next piece that we had, which was that there were after we had the Shlosh Asrei Yishtachavoyos, and we had the Shlosh Asrei Shulchanos, we also have the Shlosh Asrei Shofarot. Ayub Migdash. Now the Shlosh Asrei Shofarot bring us much more back in line with what it is that Masechet Shkalim has been dealing with, and that is, of course, what we do with funds and how we collect funds and so on. So these Shofarot, you will recall, are chests which you could put money into, and as the Mishnah explained initially, they were curved, and you would not be able to get your hand down them. They were small mouthed on top like a shofar. They were too large for you to be able to get to the bottom of, and because of that, they were able to protect the money inside. So the 13 shofarot were actually marked with what they were for. And here's what was written on them in order. V'katuv aleihem, tiklin chadatin, nu shkalim. Now we're going to explain what each one of these things were. That was number one. Number two, tiklin atikin, old shkalim. Number three, kinin, which means a pair of birds. Number four, gozle ola, which are young birds for carbon ola. Etzim is number five. We'll explain all of this. Livona is number six. Zahav la kaporet. Now, it's not clear what it is. Rashi learns that it's not la kaporet. It's lichporot, which is, according to him, for kipurei zahav. Meaning that we used it to make the golden cups that the Kohen would use, the Mekabel Adam, which were called Kippurei Zahav, according to Rashi, remember, even in the Chumash, because the Kohen would rub his finger along the top of it, and that means to be Mechaper, means to clean. So Kippurei Zahav would clean off his finger. But the other girsh is la kaporet, which is la beta kaporet, which we discussed according to the other sheet. This means the golden tiles that were used to floor and put around the wall of the Kodesh HaKadosh. Okay, and that left us with six additional ones, which were all for Nidava. Now, it doesn't say what it said on those Nidavot, and that we'll see as a machlokas in the Gemara. Now, let's explain what all of the others were for, not the Nidavot. So, the Tiklin Chavetin, that was the new Shkalim that were brought for this year, and you could continue to put them in as long as it wasn't after the final Truma. So, as was Pros HaSukkot, you could still put in your shekel late. Atikin, the next one that said old shekelim, that was for people who had not brought last year's shekel, or according to many of the Pfarshim, if you're bringing even this year's shekel, but too late to be included in the last one of the Trumais. So Mishlo Hevia Shtakad, if you didn't bring last year's shekel, then you put next year into the old shkalim, and those are included not in the new Trumas HaLishka, obviously, which can only be brought from the shkalim chadashim, but they would be added to the Shiarei HaLishka. Now, the next one that said kinim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, mean torin. Kinim simply means torin. Those are the usually translated as doves, and those were post-puberty. Remember that the B'nei Yonah were prepubescent, and the Torim were postpubescent, and the middle stage during teenage years, so to speak, they're crazy, not useful for anything. So basically, the one that said Kinim was simply a way of referring to Torim, and Gozlot, young ones, were a way of referring to B'nei Yonah, but there were never any Chata'ot. They were only Olot, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim Omrim, no. Where it said kinim, it meant matched pairs. That's the meaning of kinim, which meant that Echad Chatat ve'echad lo'ola. And the other one that said goes le'ola, those were for people who were bringing an adava of Olot. So that would be Olot. But there were two completely separate things that were not defined by the different species that they were used to purchase. They were defined by the different carbonas that they were used to purchase. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, we never had a box that was marked Chatas plus Ola. That is to say, a mixed kinim, which is what usually a Zava and a Zava and a Yoledet would have to bring. We're going to see in the Gemara why he held that you could not have a box like that. But the Chachomim say that you did have a box like that, which gives a much better explanation for why we would have two boxes for birds. One was for the combined Eula Chatas, one bird for an Eula, one for Chatas, and the other for bringing only as Eulas. And the remaining three were, remember, Eitzim, Levona, and the Zahav Lekiprorot, or for Kaporet. So this is going to be explained now. Omer Re'alai Eitzim. Somebody says, I am a chai of myself to bring wood. So obviously he can pay money and put it into the shofar for wood. But if he wants to actually bring the wood itself, he must bring shnei gzirim. Can finish shnei gzirei etzim. We'll see where we learn this out from. And these were not pieces of wood like we're used to considering. These were big blocks of wood that actually covered over the entire area of the Mokom HaMa'aracha in the Mishkan. So we're going to see how large they were as we go on in the sugya. But they weren't sticks. They were blocks. If he made a neder and he said, Are alai levona, how much levona is included? A komets, lo yifchot b'komets. We're going to learn that also out of the pasuk. If he says, Are alai zahav, he has to bring a minimum of a dinar zav, which is 25 dinrei kesef. The last six were what? Linadava. So what was done with the money that was in all of these six separate chests? Mao Yoasimba. The truth is that all of the nedavot were used for the same purpose. Lokhin ba olot. They would bring a korban ola for kayetz ha-mizbeach, for when the mizbeach didn't have any other business. And the basar would go to Hashem, so to speak, by being put on the Mizbeach, and the orot of these kayetz HaMizbeach korbanas would go to the Kohanim. And this was learned from the Medrash of Yehoyada HaKohen Gadol. And he said, look, we have a strange pasuk. First of all, the pasuk doesn't seem to be saying anything. Asham hu, Asham Asham Lashem. I mean, thank you. What exactly does that add? And not only that, not only doesn't it add, but it's very confusing. Because it says Asham Asham Lashem, which is mashma that it goes to Hashem, and yet the problem is that it also says Kachatat ka Asham, Torah achat lahem, HaKohen asher yechaper bo lo yihyeh. Now make up your mind. Does it go la Hashem or does it go to the Kohen? So not only doesn't the pasuk add any information, it confuses the information that we have. Therefore, said Yehoyada HaKohen, I'll tell you what it means. It's coming to tell me a klal, zeh klal. Wherever there is ashma that is involved, meaning anything that is coming because someone was chayte, so haba kol shehu ba mishum chatat, mishum asham, mishum ashma, it should be used, the money that's left over should be used to buy oleis, which then are mekayim both psukim. Habasar lashem, and that's the asham, asham lashem, and then la kohen asher yechaper lo yiyeh ha'orot la kohanim, which would mean that nimtzu shnei ketuvim kayamim, we would therefore be able to be mekayim both of our psukim. Asham la'ashem benogea the basar, which over here is of course an eilah because it's mosros, and asham la'kohen, which is a reference to the orot. And it seems pretty clear that this is what the pasuk meant, like Yehoyada, because basically we know that in terms of the actual description of Yehoyada HaKohen's din, of how it is that he set up at the time of Yoshio, we read this in the Haftorah. So he set up this system of these nedavos that we're talking about over here, and the shofros, he put that says over there, he took teva achad, vayikav chor bedalto. That was the beginning of this whole idea. So he was the one who set it up. And in that parsha, it said something very strange. Kesef asham, v'kesef chataot, lo yuva beit Hashem, lakohanim yiyu, which is an absolutely nutty pasuk. Money that people gave for an asham and money that people gave to a chata should not be given to the Beis HaMikdash? It should go to the kohanim's pocket? That's nuts. What could that possibly mean? So therefore, we understand that Kesef Asham, Kesef Chataot means the Mosar of Asham and the Mosar of Chataot, which was originally brought to the Berek HaBayit, he was mitaken, should go for Olos Kayetz HaMizbeach, which then will be partially Lakohanim as well, because it will be Mekayim, Lakohen Asher Yechaper Bo Lo Yiyeh, in terms of the Orot. So clearly, this was Yehoyada HaKohen's thinking as it's recorded much later in history. Tanya. So now the Braisa explains why Reb Yehuda said that there could not have been a teva that was there for the purposes of actually buying kinim, even though it said on the shofar for kinim. So why would he insist that kinim doesn't really mean kinim? Kinim means actually single birds that are torim, and that they're being brought for olot. It's such a strange understanding. So the Braisa explains there couldn't have been a shofar shokinim b'Yerushalayim simply because of tarovas. What tarovas? What happens if one of the women, one of the yoldot, one of the zavot, who put money in there, what happens if she dies before we get a chance to bring that karma? Now, if she dies, then the din is that her karban and the mo'os for her karban has a din of a chato'ot ha-metot, right? Because one of the five famous chato'ot ha-metot is a chatat shemetu ba'aleha. So how can you rely on putting money into one of these shofarot? I mean, you realize there might be 3,000 karbanos in that shofar. If one of those women dies, each and every one of those korbanos are nifsa, because they're mixed with chataot ha-metzot, and none of them can be brought, okay? So then nimtzu d'mei chataot metot muravot behen, and since we won't be able to be mechalek b'neihem, we're going to have to basically throw everything into the yam. So how could we possibly do such a thing? Therefore, it must be that both of the shofros that mention kinim, or that mention gozlos, anything has to do with birds, couldn't have been referring to korban chatas. Could only be referring to korban oil. So tainis Rabbi Miyuda. Ask the Gemara, but wait a minute. That's not really true. I mean, take a look at the bright. Now, the gears over here is horrible. Even though Lamaisa, it does say that in the Brisa, it appears, even though some of the Mefarshim over here try to change the Girsa. But from the whole context of the Girsa, it turns out that this is a Lushan that is very unfortunate. She does not say, Hare Alai Kain, to be Mechayev herself a Kain. That's not what it means at all, as becomes clear from the rest of the Brisa. Instead, what it says is that she really, I mean, the Korban Ha'eda tries to change it to say, Ha'isha she'yesha le'al-leida oziva me'viyad me'kein, and so on. Which is true that the Rambam brings the halacha that way, but there's no makar to change the braita that way. But that's what it means. So we'll have to understand that when it says Hare Alai Kain, it doesn't mean I'm mechayev myself a Kain, which would of course mean an oila. Can't be mechayev yourself a chatas. It means a woman who shows up saying, oi va voy, I gotta bring a Kain because I had a baby, I don't know what to do. So we tell her what to do. Here's what she should do. Maybe Adme Kain, v'notemto bashofer. So she should bring the money for the chatas and the oila, and she puts it into a shofer. Okay. So, okay, obviously this could be going on Libid HaChachomim, we'll hold that there was a shofar. And then Ocheles Pekachim, she's allowed to eat kachim that night. She doesn't have to worry that maybe the Kohen didn't get every single one of those birds brought. Absolutely. I mean, since the disaster with B'nai Eli, the one thing that we certainly made sure of was that no bird would be left over to prevent a woman from going home and sleeping with her husband that night. So she was able to be 100% clear that she was Torah and she could go back home. I mean, anyway, Torah for husband she was, but she would wait for being able to eat kachim to make sure. She doesn't have to worry about that. They never left over a single one in Beis Din of the Kohanim were makbid on that. And what's more, the Kohen doesn't have to worry that maybe d'mei chataot ha-metot mu'uravot behen. Now that part is most disturbing. Because, I mean, even if you want to say that we're going aliba de chachomim that say that there was a teva for kinim, and it's not like Reb Yehuda, but it's shayach that Reb Yehuda wouldn't have said that he's not allowed to bring it because he does have to be cheshesh. I mean, he shouldn't go along with this. We should at least mention that ein ha-kohen rishoy lahakriv because of the suffix of chataos ha-mesos. So apparently Reb Yehuda doesn't hold that there's a problem of chataot ha-metot at all. There is no problem of chataot ha-metot. So now how do we explain the Mishnah? Ki kamrinan, all that Reb Yehuda is worried about, of course he's not choshesh, maybe somebody will die. We're not choshesh. If we have a chazaka, somebody's alive, then we can proceed on the basis of being alive. And that the Gemara approves. If somebody sends a chatas be'ever le'yam, we bring that chatas. We don't say, it took a month to get here. How do we know he's still alive? Nobody argues on that. All that Reb Yehuda was worried about is when we know that someone died. So let's say we've got 3,000 different karbanas in here, and we find out that one of the people that came this morning had a heart attack and was dragged away from the base of Mikdash in an ambulance and died. So what are we going to do now? And throw away all the karbanas? That's what Reb Yehuda said. He's not chaylik on the idea that if, in fact, somebody put money into a shofar, that we would bring it. Of course we would bring it. Okay, now I must tell you that the pashtus is that this entire piece does not belong here. And it's not from the Yerushalmi. It's a read-in from the Bavli. Because it's exactly what it says over there, and it does not seem to appear in the old Girsos of the Yerushalmi whatsoever. But anyway, so the way I explained is the way Rav Kanievsky fits it in, that it should make sense. That we were asking that Reb Yehuda at least would argue on that piece. Okay. Now, ask the Gemara, what would be the problem? Let's say, Alibeta Rabbi Yehuda, a woman died that day. So you're saying, oy vey, we're going to have to throw out everything. Why would we have to throw out everything? Why wouldn't we simply take out the 4 zuz, which is the standard price for a cane of 1 eila and 1 chatas, and throw it into the river and be matir the rest based on brera? So we'll say the money that we took out should be huvrar, that was the money that was meant to be thrown into the river, right? Now, this is a very ridiculous question. And Tosus points this out, that it's a ridiculous question, simply because, what do you mean, brera? I understand. There's nothing to be mavar. Each person put in their money. What do you mean, be mavar? You can't be mavar something that was already mavur. Brera only applies where something was left hanging, and now you're going to go back in time, and you're going to be mavar it ex post facto retroactively, right? There's nothing to be mavar in this case. Therefore, Tosfos explains that the meaning is that obviously the Gemara is taken for granted. This is the other Rishonim explain why. Why doesn't the Gemara talk it out? Because it's so obvious. What it means is that we should have a lev bezdin masne, that any money that comes into this type of shofar, that the lev bezdin is masna, that the money is not going to be mavura for a particular person until it's actually bought on the mizbeach, and at that moment the cane is mavura, which is alok and kinim. Now you can do that. So it's obvious that that would be the only way out of this. If lev bezdin would be masna, that's the meaning of the money in the cane, then we could select arba zuzim, and based on the Tanai Bezdin, we would then know that we took out the money that was miyuchat for this woman who died, and the rest of the kinim would be kosher, and we would throw out that money. That's the Gemara's kasha. So assuming that we would do that, wouldn't that make more sense, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to say, well, we couldn't have a shofar, there's no way it's going to end up making problems, maybe only once a year, whatever, but such a thing could happen. Why not do this? Isn't this a better solution than not giving her an option of being able to put money into a cane? Answers the Gemara, well, it would be a very nice option, except for the serious problem that Rabbi Yehuda is dafka the sheet that it doesn't hold a brayer. So what good is it going to do you? Rina Biyama Rabbi Yehuda let lay brayra, so we can't possibly do it for him. Okay, moving on now to the next piece. The next piece talked about Shnei Gizrei Eitzim. So Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Bon Amar, that Rabbi Ba Bar Mama Bo'i, you remember we had the Lashon of Bo'i before that was a very confusing Lashon because it doesn't really ask anything, it asserts something. So there's different approaches. Some say that the Lashon Bo'i still means Bo'i and add a question mark at the end, even though it doesn't. Others learn that Bo'i means I'm asking you guys whether you would agree with me. Others learn that Bo'i meant he looked into this issue and decided the issue. So he initially was boy, meaning that he went through the whole sugya is what it means. But anyway, what he ended up saying was, or asking was, or questioning whether we agree with him was, what if a guy would not say Hare Alai Eitzim? What if a guy would say Hare Alai Eitz? Could he bring one of the Gizrei Eitzim? And the only reason that we're saying a minimal korban of Gizrei Eitzim is because of the way that it was stated, Harealai Eitzim. But it's not that there's only one korban that is called Shnei Gizrei Eitzim. There is a korban of a Gizar Eitzim, one piece. That's what I say. I say if he says Harealai Eitz, he's maybe Gizar Echad. Does anybody object? Omer Rebbe Elazar, no, on the contrary. It's clear from the Mishnah, because I can prove from a Mishnah that ze korban bifnei atzmo, veze korban bifnei atzmo, because the Mishnah in Yuma that describes what the Kohanim used to carry in their hands says, shnayim biyadam shnei gizrei eitzim. So there were 2 Kohanim in the morning that one would carry one of the gizrei eitzim, one would carry the other gizrei eitzim. So how could you do that if they were all one korban? How would we break the korban into 2? Must be that they're 2 separate korbanos. Now that is a ridiculous proof. Why? Because we used to break up the oila also into all these 13 different korban. One carries one leg and one carries the other leg. What are we going to say? Each leg is a separate korban? That's also silly. So maybe the reason that we carry two Kohanim, carry two Gizreitzim, is because they were big and heavy. The way we describe them, they were gigantic. I mean, so what kind of weird proof is this that it's a carbon? So the Pashtus, the next piece, is coming to be Mavara that problem. This is how I understand it. I think that it's really the only way to go. And that is, how do we know, Bichlal, that there is such a thing as a carbon Eitzim? Now, you can be Neider Eitzim. I understand you can give Eitzim as a gift to the Beis HaMikdash because we need fuel. But how do we know that that's called a carbon? Remember, we had that discussion earlier, that the carbon Eitzim, because of the fact that it was Doicha Tisha B'Av, must have had a din of a real carbon. Remember in the story where they actually were doicha the tainus on Tisha B'Av because of the chiyuv of keeping a yanta for the carbon eitzim. So the mocker of it is from the pasuk nefesh ki takriv korban mincha l'Hashem, and from there the Gemara was derish, if you remember, korban, why does it say korban mincha? All it needs to say is nefesh ki takriv mincha l'Hashem. So from korban mincha we were derish that you can bring eitzim as a korban mincha. Now, if you remember the crazy shitas that we had, was that if you hold that you could bring a eitzim as a korban, so then you would have to do kmitza on the korban. You would have to chop up some of the wood and do kmitza from it. If that's the case, then if it's one korban, of course you can't separate. We never could separate a mincha to do a kmitza on a chelik of the mincha. So therefore, since the mokar is korban, l'rabbas is a eitzim, there would be no way to split the eitzim into two kohanim, unless they were two separate korbanas. What? Yeah, not a model. It is literally a mincha. It's literally a mincha. I have to do kmitza on it. Amazing. So that's the point. Whoever heard of breaking up a mincha, yeah, you would pass on a mincha. You can't do that. I think that's the pshat. Okay. So now, how big were the Gizrei Eitzim? Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi Omer. Well, they were very thick. They were thick, one amma, and that was measured with the amma socheket. Remember, we had laughing ammas, and those laughing ammas, those were slightly larger because you would be relaxed. What it means is measured with a relaxed amma. We had various pshatim. The relaxed amma is the relaxation between the various tfachim, is that the fingers are pressed not so tight together, but in any event, it was larger than the normal amma. But measuring the length, now, so some learn length and width is what is meant. Orchan was measured by amma geduma. And the reason for this is because they had to fit, as we're about to explain, they had to fit exactly over the makom ha'maarocha, because the Torah says that you should put on the mizbeach exactly shnei gizrei eitzim. You can't have it sticking out over the area of the mizbeach that burns, even as millimeter. So because of that, you had to use the amma geduma. You had to use a very tight amma in putting it, measuring it, its length and width. But the thickness, that's fine. So there you could use the amma socheket. But Rav Choni b'shem Rav Ami says, no, it's not true. They weren't big, thick. The thickness was kumin turtani. So, okay, turtani, the pashtas, the loshen in the Bavli is that it's mochukas. In other words, you're buying in a store and you've got the flour is like put all the way on top and then you're mamachik it, so it should be smooth. So you get exactly your 1 kilo of flour. So that's like a piece of wood. It was a standard piece of wood with a little handle and you rubbed it over the top of a thing. That's the normal size. It isn't true that it was so big and thick. It was big, but it was not necessarily thick. The other lashon of tortani we've seen is tortani means a scale. So it would be like the thickness of the piece that you hold forgot what you call the kapot of the scale. But anyway, so the tortoni that holds the containers of the scale. Okay, Omer of Shmuel Bar of Yitzchak. Of course, it needed to be an amma geduma, because lo hayam mokam ha'maarocha ela amma lama. the marker of the din of the Shnei Gizrei Etzim is the Mishkan. And in the Mishkan, the actual place of the Ma'arachah was only one Amma by another Amma, based on the size of the Mizbeach. So therefore, you couldn't have a full Amma, because if you had a full Amma, you cannot fit the full Amma al Amma on an Amma al Amma. It's bound to be overlapping the edge. And lefichach lo haya bo ela Amma geduma. And it says so. It says beferish when we describe in the Braita, we talk about the different halakim of the Mizbeach she'asa Moshe. So remember, we had an Amma was the Yesod. One Amma was the Sovev, which at that point was, of course, not literally a Sovev. It was the ledge that was built around the side. Amma Karkov. And then you had the Amma on top, which was sort of not smooth. It was a rough surface that was for the Kohanim to walk on while they were walking around the Mokom HaMa'arachah. You had an Amma for the Kronos, which you couldn't use for anything. So that whole edge of an Amma, since you couldn't walk around it because you would bump into the Karen. So we took off that. And that left one Amma in the middle for the Ma'arachah. And it was on there that you were able to put the Gizrei Etzim. And that defined the Gizrei Etzim L'Doreis. And therefore, even Bizman Hazeh, even though obviously the Mokom HaMa'arachah is gigantic now, but the Gizrei Etzim that are put even on our gigantic Mokom HaMa'arachah are still the Gizrei Etzim that were put on the Mishkan She'as HaMoshe. The next thing we had was a Levona. Okay, so Levona lo yivchot mikometz. How do we know that there's a concept of a kometz when it comes to Levona? Because there is no kmita that is done on Levona. Oh. That's because of a gzeirah shava that we learn out from the lechem haponim. Because on the one hand, the Torah says, nemar kan askara. Remember that the Torah uses the lashon of askarata. So, v'natata la ma'arechet levona zaka. This is talking about the lechem haponim. V'itala lechem la askara ishel Hashem. So, the lashon of askara, however, also appears by Menachas. So therefore, Nemar Lahalan Askaran, it also says, V'komatz misham melokum tzo mishtaltao mishamna v'iktira koenet askarata hamizbecha. Right? So that means just like the askara that is said in terms of the Menachas is by definition the kometz that was predefined there, and that was melokometz. So too is the askara murkan by the lechem haponim, where we're not told exactly how much levona we're supposed to be putting down on the shulchan together with the lechem haponim. It must mean that it's below hakometz, and therefore that would also mean that when the Torah puts together et askarata ve'et kol levonata, it's basically the same amount, so that you would be bringing the kometz and you would bring a kometz of Levona. Now, this is a little bit weird for a simple reason. There is no such measurement called a kometz. That's the problem. The kometz was defined by the actual kometz of the Kohen. So how in the world could you bring a kometz Levona? We're going to get to that. But right now, let's pretend that there's an actual measurement called a kometz. So, if that's the case, ask the Gemara, if we're learning it out from Gzeira Shava, then why don't we learn it out all the way? How many kmatzim of Levona do you need for the Shulchan? Two. Because you needed to have the Shnei Bezichei Levona. So then why not say, Ma'az Karala Alan Shnei Kumatzim, Af Kan Shnei Kumatzim? So we should say that just like where you say by the Lechem HaPonim, you need two. So if we're going to learn out from the Lechem HaPonim to Anadova, so then you should need a minimum of two kumatzim. Omer Rebbe Lo, no, it doesn't work like that. Because the truth is, what's the whole mocker that you need to have a kometz? We learn it out from where in the end? From Minchas Chote. Right? Because the only way I know, it's true that the pasuk that mentions kometz is also said by kometz Nedova. But it's only because we mention it again by a Minchas Chote, that's the Mincha of a Korban Oil of a Yaret for an Ani, right? So over there, where it says again, v'kamatza kohen mimena malokum tso, from there we learn out that it's ma'akev if any of the komets is missing. Because we need to have two psukim, remember, for aveda in order for it to be ma'akev. So just like we learn out from over there, from minchas chote, that komets hachaser is pasul, so too we learn out that from here komets hachaser pasul, which would mean that the levena of the lechem haponim, if it's chaser, it is pasul. But how could that be? If you're bringing two of them, so let the remainder be made up for by the tons of extra that you have in the extra levona, right? So apparently each one of those bezichei levona is a separate din of korban. One is for one of the marachot and one is for the other marachot. You don't learn out from there that there's one korban of two levonas. So therefore, clearly, from the whole halacha, you see that each kometz is a separate korban. And that means the only reason that I need two kmatzim is because I have two marachot. And each marachot is viewed as the kmitza, so to speak, for each bazik levina is the kmitza for the lechem haponim in one of the marachot. So therefore, if somebody is neder that he wants to bring a levina, he didn't say two, so therefore he would only bring one and one kmitz. That's what happens when you keep your old Gemaras. Didn't we just learn in Shkalim that you have to bring from the Chadesh Ve'vima? Okay, so listen, you know, every time is a different punim. I mean, that's why we have to have a very long life to be able to do Shivim punim for Shkalim. I'm assuming everyone will be Mavarech me. Okay. Now, says Rabbi Yosef, now we got serious problems over here because there's no such thing as a kometz. So what do you do if you're bringing a kometz of Lavona? How the heck do you decide whose kometz it is? Now, you may remember that there is such a thing as a Kohen Gadol. We talked about Barnea to be the Kohen Gadol, but a Kohen Gadol could also mean the biggest, fattest Kohen you got in the place, right? Kohen Gadol. That's what this Gemara means. So Amar Rav Yosa, look, the only way we're going to be able to be Mekayim the Milsa de Rabbi Law is basically he's telling you that if you are Nedev Levena, you have to look for the biggest Kohen that is available in that Mishmar, and you're going to have to give the Levona that's going to fit into his Kometz. So it's really a function of mazel, you know. What day are you bringing your kometz?
It's the guy with the biggest hand.
Guy with the biggest hand. Which, of course, if my Shver Zatzal had been a Kohen, that would have been the ultimate kometz. Right. So anyway, but Reb Chizkiya B'Shem Reb Yirmiya says, that's not true. You can bring in the kometz of the Baalim. Because, look, we don't learn out directly, do we, from the Lechem Aponim? I mean, you could say the Lechem Aponim, yes. The Lechem Aponim in Achinami would have to be according to the largest possible kometz. I agree. But, I mean, when it would come to me, if I'm bringing a kometz, can't I decide which kohen I want to give it to? I'm not mechuyev to give my, this is a nedava. I'm not mechuyev to give my nedavet to a particular kohen. So if that's the case, it's up to me. And therefore, I can decide the kometz that appears to me to be the type of kometz I want to give. Then I'll find a kohen to match it up with. Fine. The next thing we learned was that if you said Zahav, it's got to be at least it's an awfully big shear, a dinar Zav, 25 dinrei kesef. Amar Rabbi Elazar, that's only where he mentioned that he's going to be bringing a golden coin. If he said, I'm bringing a piece of gold, so then what makes you think it had to be a minimum of a coin of any kind? If he didn't mention something that has a tzura on it, he could bring even a tzinora. A tzinora is a tiny fork, which basically could be used to clean out the inside of the menorah from ash or something. Fine. So there's no minimum on that. Okay, what do we do with the last six? You told me that there were six for Nadava. I don't know why we need six for. I mean, why? You didn't say that they had different names on them. So why do we need six for Nadava? I mean, why can't there just be one thing for Nadava? So Chizkiah says, there were shisha batei avot. Remember, there were 24 mishmaras. Each one worked for 1 week, twice a year. And each one of those mishmarot were separated into six separate families of batei avot. Now, as we know from the pasuk of Amech Merivei Kohen, and as we know from our own experience here in the Daf Yomi, Kohanim are always making trouble. So they're always arguing about things. So if that's the case, we figure all we need is to have one thing of a nedava and six batei avos. So just imagine what happens when the second Beit Av comes in that week and says, why those no good for nothing lousy four-letter words from taking every last bit of the moisturizer that were put into the nedavas and keeping all the skins for themselves and not leaving us a darn thing? You could just imagine what will be going on in the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, says Chizkiah, make sure that you've got six of them so that one, it's all a matter of luck. Okay, so you're marked with the different batei avot. Whoever comes in on Sunday gets one, comes in on Monday gets two, and so on and so forth. Bar Pedaya Omer, these were keneged the shisha behemais that could be brought as an ayla. So par, egel, so'ir, ayel, gedi, and tleh. So since they were all used for aylais of the tzibur, so if there was any preference, or if they had been meisrais from a certain type of animal, so we put them into the appropriate place. Shmuel Amar, they are keneged the shisha karbonis where we had the motarot that went for the kayetz hamizbeach. So therefore, we had the kinei zavin and kinei zavais and kinei yoldais. Those are all the same. We have chataot. We have meaning motrot, motor chatas, motor asham, motor menachas, motor asirit ha'efa of the kohen gadol, and that gave us six. Rabbi Yochanan said, look, I had nothing to do with keneged anything. There was just a lot of money that was brought for kayetz hamizbeach. We weren't able to make certain that we're going to empty it sufficiently. So ribula shofarot arbei, they all just said nedava. That's whatever was convenient. You put it into one, you put it into the other, and stop making so much out of it. So this is the wonderful description of what happened at the time of the transition between Ataliah, was that really vicious murderer, and tried to destroy the entire Mishpachas Beis David. And it was because of Yehoyada Kohen, who hid Yoash out until he was 7 years old, and then he was able to crown him and so on. We spoke about that before when we were talking about the Shemen HaMishka, the use of the Shemen HaMishka. So that was Yoash Mipnei Ataliah. But anyway, what happened was that the the family of Ataliah had made, we were talking about Pirtzot here, and they had usually, you actually use the word pirtzos. They were parates, the Beis HaMikdash. They had messed it up. And what they did was they went into this massive repair of the Beis HaMikdash. And they did this first by the first shofar, by making the first box. So we have two different versions of that box. And that's really what I think is concerns the Gemara over here, and why it is the Gemara is worried about what it says. Because basically, after the whole story, this pasuk over here is only important because of its end. What happens is that first, what we find is that they made the box. Everybody put in money into the box. This is all in Divrei HaYomim. And over there it says that when they finished rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, they had a lot of money left over. So it says, Uchechalotam, so when they finished the work, Heviu lifnei ha-melech v'Yehoyada, they brought all the money to Melech Yoash and Yehoyada, and it says, what did they do with that money? V'yaseu chelim lebeit Hashem. They turned it into klei sharet, and kapot, clay zahav, and so on. So now that concerns us a little bit. Now, the reason that that concerns us is, as I'll explain to you a little bit later, our Gemara has some really confused issues from the Bavli that got mixed up in here. The Gra changes the entire Girsa, but because it appears that the Mefarshim, most of the Mefarshim on the Daf, just try to work the Girsa into the Girsa that we have, which is not terrible. But basically, the real issue revolves around the problem of, are you allowed to use money that was given to the Beit HaKabayit? Are you allowed to use it to make kelim for the Beis HaMikdash? Because the kelim, remember we had before, that kelim were made out of either Moser Nedava, we spoke about, Moser Nesachim, we spoke about, or other Moseros. That was the machlokas we had earlier. So the shaila is, can you also make kelim out of the Beit HaKabayit? The reason that we're using it from the Moser Alishka or from Moser Nesachim is because we viewed kelim as being central to the Hakrovas Korbonas, and therefore they related to the Mizbeach, and we wouldn't utilize funds from Beit HaKabayit. So this was a whole big issue. So now it says over here that all of the money that had been brought and thrown into that Teva, which we call the Shofar over here, was used, in fact, to buy Kalin after they finished using it for the reconstruction of the Beis HaMikdash that Atalia had wrecked. So that's one issue that bothers us, because if it's the same money that was the money used for the reconstruction, how did we use it for Kalin? Remember, we said even the Mizbeach HaZov would also have been made not from Beit HaKabayit funds for the same reason, because Mizbeach HaZov was used only for the Ketores, and it doesn't have a din of binyan. Okay, so basically what Reb Shmuel bar Reb Nachman b'shem Reb Yonatan says is that there were two different shofros that said nedava. Okay, so now this is relates very tangentially to our Mishnah, because our Mishnah talked about six different shofros that say nedava, remember? And we were trying to figure out what they were for. Were they for different purposes, or they were al shem different things, or they were made from different motorot, all of which were used for the same purpose, like Gufa, the drusha of Yehoyada HaKohen, who we're referring to over here. So Yehoyada was the one that was very much involved in these definitions of what funds go for and how they're utilized. He was the one that was machadish, that we have these nedavas that go for Kayetz HaMizbeach. And he, of course, was the one that when we read the beautiful Haftorah about Vayikach Yehoyada HaKohen Aron Echad, that is, it seems to be an equivalent or a parallel to what's in Divrei HaYomim. The problem is that there's serious differences between them. That's the problem. And that underlies the discussion in the Gemara. Because if you take a look in Melachim, in the famous Haftorah of Yehoyada, so it says over there, Vayikach Yehoyada HaKohen Aron Echad, Vayikov Chor Bedalto, Vayiten Oto Etzel HaMizbeach Miyamin Bo'o Ish Beit Hashem. So you put it to the right of the Mizbeach. That means that it was inside of the Azorah. And basically, that is a real stira to the Pasuk in Divrei HaYomim, because the Pasuk in Divrei HaYomim that seems to be describing the same shofar says that Vayomer HaMelech Vayasu Aron Echad Vayitnu B'Shar Beit Hashem Chutzah, that it was put right at the gate outside of the Azorah where you came in. So we've got two issues. Can it be the same thing that was in two different places? Doesn't make sense. Can it be the same thing that was used for two different purposes? Because, I mean, when it came to the purposes in Melachim, it says beferish over there as a continuation of that pasuk in Melachim. So it says over there, lo ye'aseh Beit Hashem, you will remember this from the Haftorah, lo ye'aseh Beit Hashem, sipot kesev mizamrot, mizrakot, chatzotzrot, kol kli zahav, v'kli chesev, mina kesev, v'muvah Beit Hashem. So it goes out of its way to say you could not use the money that was in the shofar that Yehoyada had put up. You could not use it for kelim. So how in the world could we get away with saying that these two shofarot were the same? They're in different places, and they were beferish used for different purposes. So I think that's why we introduce the sugya with the pasuk of chalotam. And it's coming, obviously, as a continuation of the drosha of Yehoyada HaKohen, who was the one that was koveya the usages of this money. So that's what I think is going on over here. Again, as I say, the Girsa is quite confused. I'm going with the simple Girsa because that's most of the Mefarshim on the daf follow that Girsa. But the Yerushalmi takes out like half of these words. It just strips it down. I meant the Gra strips it down. Okay, so therefore, what we understand is there must have been shtei nidavot. So they were obviously two different purposes. One of these was for kalim, and one of those were for anti-kalim, and they were in two different places. Tani devei Rabbi Shmuel, Masha Einkin, the Bryson, devei Rabbi Shmuel, says, no. There was only one nidava. Like it says, why do you think it says, Vayomra melech vayasru aron echad? What does it stress echad dafka? Echad must mean that it was only, it's Gufa coming to tell me that there was really only one. You could see how interesting this is in terms of our Gemara, where Rabbi Yochanan just said, well, we made six. Why did we make six? Because there's a lot of money coming in. And it's a little bit funny that we should find in the description of the inception of this whole thing, that we should find Bedavka, the stress in both Pesukim is Echad. They only made one. And then, now that is not, this is a combination of two Pesukim. The first part is the Pesuk of Devar HaYomim. The second part is something like the Pesuk in Malachim, but it's definitely not the Pesuk of Devar HaYomim. Okay, anyway, so we're basically trying to put it together. That's exactly the point that Rabbi Shmuel is making. We put it together, so we end up understanding what's going on. What about the fact that it says that it was somewhere else? I mean, how are you going to explain that? So if it says it was put outside, how could it be also put inside? How could it be the same thing? So Rav Huna, there's two approaches to this. One approach is that Rav Huna is being medayik from the words Vayomer HaMelech. So the Vayomer HaMelech means that apparently after Yoyada had set things up in Melachim, and he had put it inside, Miyamin, the Melech subsequently said, in Divrei HaYomim, it's recorded that the Melech subsequently said to take the shofar that Benayo had made, that Yehoyada had made, and put it outside. Why? Because he saw that many people were unable to make their donation because they were tamei, so they weren't allowed to come into the Beis HaMikdash, so they couldn't get the money to the teva. So because of that, the Melech said to put it outside. That's the way some learn, which is a very nice diak in the pasuk, because it's a little bit strange to say Vayomer HaMelech after the whole idea comes from Yehoyada. The other approach is that since there were also people that were Tamei, so Memela, they put an extension. It was like it's like having a main post office and a post office, how do you say sniff in English? I forgot the word.
Brunch.
A brunch, thank you. Yes, that's literally what the word snif means, a branch to a tree. So it was like a branch of the nidava, of the teva for the dava inside. That's the other way to learn, but the idea is the same. So taina is Rav Huna b'shem Rav Yosef, but you can't say that. Why? Because it says, ach lo yaseh beit Hashem sipot kesef b'zamrot. You're not allowed to use the money from there, it says beferish malachim, to make any type of kalim. I don't care what they are. I don't care if they're musical instruments. I don't care if they're cups that used to play the gold, to pour the dam, whatever it is. It says every last penny of it was given to the people that were hired to do the work in the Beit Hashem. So how can you possibly claim, says Rabbi Yosef, that it's really the same? So he seems to end up with that psak. Now in the Bavli, the Gemara answers that question. And the Gemara simply says the same teretz that we use always when we run into this problem. And that is that Lev Bezdin is Masna Aleihem. So then that means that there's a t'nai at the beginning when we give these, we give the kiddush to the money that's coming into these things, that Lev Bezdin is Masna, that Motarot should be flipped for usages of Kalim. So that we're not really using Berak HaBayit funds for Kalim. We're using a direct money for Kalim because it was initially given al pi Lev Bezdin Masna for Kalim. And that is the end of the Sugya of Yehoyada. Hadron Alach Perek Shloshes Reshofarot.
The nether.